This episode of Fuel for the Soul is powered by ASICS. Head over to ASICS.com and sign up for a one ASICS account. It's completely free, and when you sign up, you will receive 10% off your first purchase. You'll also gain access to exclusive colorways on ASICS.com, free standard shipping, special birthday month discounts, and more.
Hi, this is Thomas with Believe in the Run.
This is Megan with Believe in the Run.
And this is Megan with Featherstone Nutrition.
Feathers! I hope I just blew someone's ear out with that. Yeah, it's stuck at this point. People are calling you Feathers. It's worked. I think that you should run your next race in a feather costume. It doesn't have to be yellow. It could be any color of your choice, but yellow would be kind of cool with orange leggings.
Ew.
And maybe it. Meg, do you know who I'm talking about?
Big Bird?
A little bit like Big Bird. Yeah.
And then Meg can run a Snuffleupagus.
Okay. That'd You've had hilarious. A lot of ideas. This one might be towards the bottom.
I don't know. And then I could run in a garbage can.
You've seen how I sweat. Can you imagine me in a feathered costume out there? It would get real ugly.
Okay. Maybe it's something like those boa shorts that look like jeans. It just looks like feathers, but it's not.
Okay.
Ooh, actually... That'd be kind of nice if we just got, and it doesn't have to, again, doesn't need to be the yellow one, but what if we had a singlet for you that was all feathers?
In the backdrop, I dig it.
Yeah, and then you could wear a boa.
Greg, Itihara, are you there?
There
Let's
you go.
Let's get to work.
Okay, anyway, you're listening to Fuel for the Soul, the podcast where we talk nonsense along with all things hydration and nutrition and how it affects performance. And today we're diving into a bunch of the questions that you guys have submitted recently.
Before we get into that, can we just talk about the response from the Ozempic podcast? Because I thought it was fantastic.
Yes, we got a lot of positive response, which was nice to hear.
And I keep calling it the Ozempic podcast, but it's the GPT-9er5.
Yep, that's what
whatever.
It's called.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I thought I was losing my mind. The reason I like some of the feedback we got, I really thought I was losing my mind that the people are thinking they can just pull the wool over our eyes. It's like that ketone thing. Like they're just throwing out everything. Like they're like, hey, I'm taking this and I never need to take my testosterone shots again. I'm taking ketones and I can skip a meal. I'm taking ketones and I went from diabetic to non-diabetic. I'm taking ketones. My hair grew back. They are literally saying anything without any kind of, you know, backup.
Yeah,
it's just a dude in his couch. Like, I took it and, you know, now I'm super strong. Before this, I was weak and now I can crush cans of beer into my forehead. Couldn't do that before. Have you noticed that, by the way, in your feed?
Because you're sending me the ketone. I feel like Instagram has figured me out that I don't dive into all this fad diet crap. So
I don't get it either.
I see it just when
Thomas,
you send it
he
to
shows
me.
It to me. Yeah.
Well, I think fitting. men are targeted for the ketones.
Yeah.
I do think this one is male targeted.
He did send me something last night, and this guy legitimately said ketones are an appetite suppressant. I don't need to eat lunch. I was like, wait.
He said, can replace a meal.
We can't drink a bottle of ketones for lunch? Like, get this off the internet.
First off, it's about the size of a 5-hour energy.
But I feel like they're probably playing into the fact that Ozempic is so big right now. So they're like, oh, what is everyone excited about that for? Because it suppresses your appetite. Let's say ketones does that.
That's like, a really good
they're
point.
just jumping into the clickbait.
It's like the old medicine show. Like, whatever hurts you, this tonic will cure. Oh, you're losing your hair? This will work. Oh, you're not up for the ladies? This will do it. You want to run faster? This will do it. You want to grow a pair of wings? This will do it.
I might try it for wings. That sounds fun.
Yeah, I'm in. If they give you wings.
Go listen to
I think we're supposed to drink Red Bull for that. I'm pretty sure they
No, they got they sued got that for one. That. Did you know they got sued for that?
Whoopsie.
Yeah. Aww. Yeah, because it doesn't actually help you grow wings.
What is so wrong with our society? Them. That is, who decided to sue for it? Okay. We're really off to a good start here.
Yeah. Our sponsor today is Cherrabundi.
The Bundy.
Thomas is holding up the sleep one.
What are you holding up?
The pure 100%
so that's just
cherry concentrate.
That's the standard, but there's another one.
But anyway, the main point of this stuff is to One, reduce inflammation. Obviously, the melatonin one helps with sleep and then also to recover faster. So, Megan, tell us why? In the science-y way, you know, why does this work?
Yeah. So, I mean, Tarte Cherry Juice, they've been researching for a long time, like before I even started this business. And I was like just a little dietitian peon back in the hospital. They were doing a ton of studies on Tarte Cherry for muscle recovery because they're just crazy high in antioxidants, like much, much higher than any other type of cherry, right? It has to be the Tarte Cherry Juice. And what they found is those increased levels of antioxidants in our body actually help speed up muscle recovery, specifically DOMS, the delayed onset muscle soreness. So cherry juice has been really helpful in not allowing our muscles to get so sore because they help recover faster, right? And then even without melatonin, tart cherry juice has been shown to help with sleep. So a lot of people will drink it at night. It's got carbs in it, so that helps restock glycogen stores overnight. So, you know, in my opinion, especially just this pure tart cherry concentrate, it's like a food product, right? So it's not like a risky supplement or anything. And it is potentially very beneficial for recovery. It has extra carbs, which we know we need. So in my eyes, it's just a win-win to slug some of these back when we're training hard.
I like the taste.
And Thomas was saying he sometimes will dilute it with water. So it's more of like a drink afterwards. And just to clarify, this is intended for post-run workout or whatever, not pre, right?
Well, yeah. If you're going to sleep, you're pre.
Yeah, I suppose.
I mean, it's a little less time sensitive, if you will. It's like most of the studies, they just have people take it once or twice a day for like 5 days before and 5 days after a marathon and see what happens, you know. So it's a little less, you know, time sensitive than some other types of supplements. My kids love it.
You know
it
what else is good on
sparkling water?
On hot days, you throw it in the freezer.
Yeah.
And cut the top off and then you got a cherry popsicle.
I'll have to try that.
Super tart. So, like, you come in from a hot run, you're sweaty. Megan's like, "What? Why are you getting sweat all over the house?" I'm like, "Quiet. Hand me a Tirabundi from the freezer."
Quiet. Yeah, my kids have gotten into my stash, and they pour it into their sparkling water. They're obsessed with it. So,
I wonder, I got a question for it. Could you add it to a recipe and it still have its benefits, or once you cook, it would be like, oh, you could?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Like a smoothie or something. That'd be good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, if you guys want to get some of this deliciousness, you can go to cherrybundy.com and then use the code FUEL, F-U-E-L, at checkout for 20% off.
That's weird. We have a show called Fuel for the Soul, and they have a code that's FUEL.
Whoa.
That's neat.
You suppose that was on purpose?
You think?
I suppose.
Nailed it. All right, let's go ahead and dive into our first listener question here. And this is timely, well, kind of, because it's starting to warm up. But they said, "Hi, all. I started using Scratch Labs high sodium hydration mix based on your recommendation back when it was called hyperhydration. I also followed your same use case for using it the night before some big workouts and races. I see now that it is discontinued. Though Scratch offers a substitute of 3 servings of everyday drink mix plus 1 serving of sport drink mix, it's also still available for purchase at some places. Questions: should I stock up on the remaining supply? Do you have a suggestion down the path of least resistance for figuring out what should be okay to use in place of Scratch high sodium? Like, is 1 element or liquid IV enough for the average runner, even though they have much less sodium?"
Meg, I would say that Element is one before Meg says something, because they're a sponsor for another podcast. But not only that, it actually is pretty salty.
Yeah.
And you can get a discount.
Element is... has a ton of sodium. It doesn't have the carbs like Scratch has, but I guess neither does the everyday drink mix. And I guess the hyperhydration was mostly sodium anyway, right? Versus the carbs.
Yeah, there were some carbs. So, I mean, everybody had their panties in a little bit of a ruffle here when when the high sodium, or the hyperhydration as it was called before, got discontinued. Because we've talked about that a lot on here, because it was so easy, and we love Scratch. It was just easy to take 1720 milligrams of sodium down in one packet, you know. But so people were you know, obviously a little bit disgruntled when it was discontinued. But like you guys said, there's a lot of options for high sodium drinks out there. Like there's Element T, Liquid IV, you can just have a couple. So there's options. And I think, you know, I was really excited. I got a package this week and it was the Scratch Everyday Hydration. I was like, sweet. So I get to try it. So I want to talk a little bit about it and kind of answer her questions now that I have actually tried it. And it's like a very tiny little pouch because it literally is just sodium and it has like an essence of flavor. So this one's tangerine and there's also like a lemon lime one. So it's not sweet. So this is the differentiating factor for me. Somebody who doesn't like stevia or doesn't want sweetness with their sodium, like this is a product like in a totally different bucket for me, right? Like Thomas.
So if somebody like, just wants more like a seawater.
But see, I mixed up one serving. So 400 milligrams of sodium and I put it in like 16 ounces of water, which is like the high end of what they recommend. I didn't think it tasted salty at all. So I really
We have the same, we got the same sample package and I didn't even taste it. Like I didn't think there was anything in there.
Yeah. I actually don't like that because I will try to drink regular water. So I bring in like 3 bottles to work a day and I have a fresh water bottle that has nothing in it. I usually do one that has an LMNT or anything else that you can flavor your drink with. And it's the flavor in that thing that actually encourages me to drink more.
Right. So I think, you know, it's a good thing to add into the repertoire. But yeah, some people aren't going to like the usage of it. I personally loved it. Like, I think it's going to be, I'll just stack 3 servings of that as like a hyperhydration. And then two, I mean, we've talked a lot, both Meg and I are like heavier, saltier sweaters. So I'll probably add some of that into a bottle of Scratch when it's going to be a hot race. So I'm getting even more sodium in the bottle I'm carrying. So I kind of like the versatility of the product that you can kind of doctor it however you want. Mm-hmm. But that's me. I always screw with things and play with things and change them. So like that fits my personality. But to Thomas's point, like, and to this listener question, she's like, this sounds like a lot. This sounds like a lot that I have to figure this out myself. So I can see both sides of it completely. But I do think it's an option.
In a packet of Element, in a packet of Element tea, mm-hmm. what, how it's much Element? Why do I always do that? How much sodium is in a packet of Element?
There's 1,000 milligrams of sodium. So it would be 2.5 servings of this. Yeah.
So when we're drinking the night before and you're like recommending that people hyperhydrate, mm-hmm. What would be the recommended amount? I guess a little bit's on body weight, but mm-hmm. say for someone who is 175 sitting across from you, what would be your recommendation for the night before a big race?
I would do at least one and then eat some salty stuff for food with it. Or if you know you haven't eaten a ton of sodium at dinner, I would probably do 2 and get like, if it's going to be a hot race to get in like the 2000 milligrams, that would be closer to the older product.
So how many of the scoops of the new Scratch would you need to do that?
4.
2 Elements or 4 scoops of Scratch.
Yeah. And like I was saying, they also did, they send you guys these little individual ones too. So I also think it would be easy to stash this in a handheld, like if you wanted, if you needed more sodium. So again, I think it's a versatile option, but her question, they're recommending to recreate the high sodium, to use 3 servings of this with regular Scratch. We don't necessarily need carbs to hyperhydrate. So like it's more of a sodium thing. So I think you do you, right? Find your sodium however you want, whether it's this product, like Thomas said, whether it's a different product. But I do think these are, you know, good options.
And the hyperhydration, which is like you're saying you don't really need the carbs. That's like the pre-race where mm-hmm. you're just trying to get in the sodium versus during race, where I prefer, and I think you would recommend the regular Scratch that has the carbs so that you're getting both carbs and sodium out there.
Correct. And then if you need even more sodium, you just add this into something that has carbs, which I think is really nice because it won't add flavor. It doesn't have sweeteners in it. So I think it, again, it just makes it really versatile.
Perfect. I mean, yeah, I get it. Like why maybe they're just simplifying the amount of products they have and because you can kind of recreate it with these. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it works.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I love it, but I think it is a little cumbersome for people who don't want to have to play around with things.
Okay. Let's move on to our next question from Jennifer. She said, Hey, y'all, loyal listener here. Love, love the podcast and all the amazing information you provide to us humble, nutritionally challenged runners. My question is in regards to caffeine. I drink decaf on the daily, but on race morning, I like to have one cup of the real stuff about 2 hours before the race and usually take in a calf gel or two. I've been using Never Second. Morton is too much caffeine for this lightweight. And recently, I had an unfortunate case of severe runner trots during a half marathon.
Ooh.
Everything was going well until mile six when my guts announced themselves. Two grisly bathroom stops and bad intestinal cramping for the remainder of the race. I've been trying to figure out what could have caused the distress. I had a boring bland carb load with little fiber and fat and nothing new. I know when the effort is higher that blood is sent to the working muscles rather than the GI tract. Wow, she's really listening.
I know.
So could that combined with the caffeine have caused my catastrophe?
I like that.
I'm running a marathon next month. So if you have any thoughts on this one, I sure would appreciate the help. Thanks from me and my intestines.
That was so well written and clever that I would have thought Robbie wrote that.
Yeah, Jennifer, kudos.
So before we hit this, it's interesting. Our coach, Megan, my coach, told us to not have coffee this week, to do lemon water with honey.
I might have ignored this advice.
Yeah, honey and lemon water, and skip the coffee because I think he thinks caffeine's the devil.
So there was some research 20, 30 years ago, maybe older, that said if you abstain from caffeine for like a week before your race, then the benefits of caffeine are more pronounced on race day. So that's where that is coming from. But they've done some research.
It's kind of like if somebody was a weed smoker or drinker, and you're saying, you know, you get a better high if you're not
right
accustomed to the weed smoke. Or yes, maybe for the alcohol, you're going to get drunk faster.
More relative terms, they said this for carb loading too, right? Yes. Where it was like a few days before, don't eat any carbs and then eat all the carbs.
Yeah.
So.
Right. And I think, you know, the carb load conversation and the caffeine conversation are the exact same for me. Like the week before the race, there's usually a lot of nerves, anxiety, phantom pains. Like most of us aren't like cool, calm, and collected going into our race. So not eating carbs or abstaining from caffeine, like that's just going to make this worse, right? And I do think some people, if you want to do it and you think it works, that's great. But I also think don't rock the boat, because we still know caffeine is beneficial on race day, regardless of if you abstain in the week ahead of time, you know? So I personally don't cut back on either carbs or caffeine in my taper. But I don't think we need to. I think there's some more recent research that shows that we don't have to do that.
But so do you think her issues were related to the caffeine, or do you think it was something else entirely? What do we think happened here?
Right. So I think, you know, as I'm thinking through what happened here from the great information that she gave us, first and foremost, we know that 3 to 5 milligrams per kilogram of body weight is what improves performance from a caffeine perspective. So you want to take a look if how much did she take in? Was it too much for her body weight? Was it not? For most people, that's anywhere from like 200 to 400 milligrams of caffeine. So I would guess that she took in 150 milligrams of caffeine, because Never Second has 75. So that's not a crazy amount. But then that also goes to, some of us metabolize caffeine differently. So we have a gene and we're either fast metabolizers or slow metabolizers. So typically slow caffeine metabolizers have more of the negative side effects from caffeine. They get shaky, their heart rate increases, they feel anxious. Like those typically the people who don't drink coffee on a daily basis. So it's kind of sounds like, I mean, she said she typically drinks decaf coffee and Morton is too much caffeine for her. So the vibe I got from her is that she's sensitive to caffeine. So for someone who's sensitive to caffeine and then is racing really fast, maybe the weather was hot. I think the combination of those factors, I think the caffeine could have pushed her over the edge to make those GI issues worse. But for somebody who tolerates caffeine really, really well, we typically don't see that impacting the GI side effects in a race. So for her, I wonder if it was one of the factors along with the others. But, you know, I think the best thing to do would at during a hard workout, you know, try it again, see if it happens, you know, versus trying it again in her marathon that she's training for, like play with it before it.
But be near a bathroom though.
Yeah. Right. It sounds like this catastrophe was no fun.
I mean, can just general nerves affect that too? Like,
yeah.
Like, I think it could compound it. Like if you're not used to caffeine and you're worked up about the race, you're, you know, really intense about the effort that you're going to be about to put out. That's where I feel like you can get like into trouble.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And two, she was racing a half. So our perceived exertion is higher. Our heart rate is higher. All of those things contribute to our blood flow not going to our GI tract, which in some people causes, you know, the diarrhea because it's just your stomach just freaks out. And it's like, there's things in here. I don't know what to do with it. And they just drop it, right? So if she's prone to that, it could have been mostly the intensity of a half marathon race. So for a marathon, she shouldn't be at that intensity. So it should be better. But again, like I think she should practice with those caffeine gels because I do, just because she's sensitive to caffeine on a daily basis, it makes me wonder if maybe we need to play with that a little bit.
I like how you say that the intensity is higher in the half marathon than the marathon. Like I feel like you're racing.
No, you think? You're uncomfortable in a half the whole time. Marathon, at least you start out.
Dude, 5Ks, I'm uncomfortable the whole time. That half marathons, you're using. Like, we just did a 10-miler. Were you uncomfortable the whole time?
No, I didn't race it.
I know, but still.
I still have PTSD from racing the Houston half. I'm like, that hurts so bad. Like, I'm like, I have no
idea. Was that the year that I was there with you?
Yeah.
Oh, that was fun. That was a good one.
Yeah. And you PR'd too.
Yeah, I was working really hard. It hurt.
Yeah. Well, that's when your ferritin was real low.
Right. There was a devil at play there, but you know.
Stupid ferritin.
I know, right?
One quick question on the caffeine. We debunked that caffeine doesn't dehydrate you, right? Because wasn't that like a thing people thought for a long time?
Correct.
Which is not true.
Nope.
Okay. Because I feel like if I ever have GI issues, it's always because I'm dehydrated, like almost 99% of the time.
I totally agree. I'm like, the winter has been great on me. And then I get one hot run and I'm like, uh-oh. Yeah.
Okay. So Jennifer, practice before your marathon, but we don't think it's necessarily the caffeine. It's probably a combination of things there.
Right.
Okay, this next question is from our Aussie friend. They said, your marathon fueling and hydration advice is without flaw. Wow. So would be interested to hear what you would do for ultra marathons. Have been doing them for a few years, but haven't quite found the magic combo of things that work with me in our climate. Some input to throw into the Feathers algorithm. Races are usually in Queensland, which is climatically the Florida of Australia. So races are usually in the 25 to 30 degrees Celsius, 77 to 94 Fahrenheit.
No.
80% plus humidity with distances in the 50K with 6,500 feet of elevation to 5,000. Oh my gosh, to 16,500 feet of elevation. So insane. Enjoy Boston in a few weeks. We have a local runner that made qualifying and had the cash to get over there. Hopefully it's not too cold for an Aussie. I think they're going to be okay.
Yeah. I think so too. I just love
this question. Hope not. I hope it's really cold.
Yeah. I hope he freezes. He might in the 50s and 60s. He might freeze.
I know this crazy. When Meg's dad used to come up, it would be 70 degrees and he was coming up from Florida and he'd be like, it's freezing here.
Yeah, Florida will do that to you.
Right.
But those racing in those conditions just sounds like a different, like that's like a different sport.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the Sydney it's marathon a water is sport. Similar weather, so it's a little frightening. Yeah. But TBD on that one. So I think, you know, the basic principles don't change, right? Like nutrition and hydration are our goals here, but we're going to have to dial in, like, what does that look like for some of these races? So the biggest thing that I recommend for ultras is like having an hourly goal of calories and hydration. And obviously that's going to change when it's hotter, when the terrain is different, right? Time on feet is different out there. So that's why a lot of times I like people to focus on like X amount of calories per hour as ultra runners versus 50 grams of carbs, because when the exertion is lower and you're out there longer, you got to eat food. Like we got to have like granola bars and, you know, as Robbie was doing, potatoes dipped in salt. Like, you know, we want to make sure we're getting enough food out there too, not just gels. So depending on the athlete and how long they're out there, like 200 to 400 calories an hour is usually what we do. If it's a lower intensity, like obviously the lower end of that would be good. And then body size is going to impact it as well. But then I think for him, the big thing is going to be the sodium in the fluid. Like there needs, as I mentioned, there needs to be a goal per hour because we're going to get behind in this real quickly. So, you know, a lot of times when I work with ultra runners, we'll take a look at like, where are the aid stations? When can we refill? Okay. So how much time is going to pass before we can refill hydration? So how much do we need to carry on us? And we'll have like a goal of like, we need to finish this by this aid station, you know? So I think you can get like super specific with it. You know, but for him, I would say in that type of weather, I'm assuming he's sweating a decent bit. So, you know, 20 to 24 ounces an hour and like upwards of like 600, 800 milligrams of sodium is probably a good place to start with that. And then the nice thing about ultras is they have all those aid stations like you guys were talking about. So like you have all these levers you can pull when you get there. So if you get there and you're like, okay, I need way more sodium, you have options at those aid stations. So you don't necessarily have to carry everything on you. You can kind of have a rough plan of what should work and then like augment things with a bag drop or the aid stations and all that kind of stuff.
I think what I love about ultras is that because the intensity isn't so high, typically you can eat like real food.
Right.
And so your sodium will probably mostly come from a beverage, but also you can have like a potato dipped in salt or something. Mm-hmm. So it's easier to get that in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm still not sure I would do these races in that heat, but I guess if that's your climate, that's your option.
Meg, right. When we ran the Trans Rockies, we ran through the first day was a hot day through the desert. It was low country, basically.
Not 80% humidity.
Mm. No, it was very dry.
Yeah.
But that thing was, I remember I ate so much watermelon that like I was running and it was like, floosh, floosh, floosh. That was going, yeah.
That's a good idea though.
All right. So the main things though, is to create a goal for not only calories, carbs, but sodium and make sure you're hitting that every hour.
Are you sponsored by the sodium, like lobby group out of DC or something?
Yeah. I'm being paid out by Big Sodium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
big sodium.
That's what I was thinking. Big sodium, because we do seem to push sodium a lot, and I thought maybe there was like we're nefarious or something.
Well, you know what's funny? I was talking to our neighbors after the eclipse. Like everyone was outside, you know, so they had like aunts and uncles, and you know, I was talking to a friend's cousin, and she was asking what I do, and she's a nurse, so you know, she knows about all this stuff, and I was just telling her like the biggest thing is working with runners. Conventional nutritional wisdom is not the same, right? We are pushing sodium, we're pushing carbs. So like, I think that's why we talk about it all the time, because it's really easy in our society to be like, oh no, sodium's bad. Like I don't need sodium. And when we look at how much we're losing, like it's so detrimental to our health to not increase it around these hotter races. So
before this, I thought of sodium like cigarettes. Like I was like,
Right.
Like it's bad for you. Like they had salt alternatives and stuff were coming out in the 90s and stuff.
Yeah.
But I love now that I know that it's okay, because I love salt. I do like on everything, like a salty, if you want to make a good tortilla chip, throw some salt on that.
Yeah.
Like it works.
Yeah. That's partially why I love Element's marketing. It's just so like in your face. They're like, throw salt at it.
Salt
like,
the earth.
Salt everything. Like, let's get salty. Like it's great. I love that they're like all in on it.
Yeah. And I mean, I get it, because I was a runner before I had kids and then obviously a runner after. So I was like all about sodium to feel better when I was running. And then when I was pregnant, I wasn't running that as much, you know, and then I had hypertension. So I had to watch sodium. So going from like pushing sodium to having to watch it when I was pregnant with Smith was so hard. And then going back to like, no, we need to eat this again. So like, I'm sure I'm not the only one who's had to like up and, you know, watch sodium for different reasons, whether it was more or less. And it can be a little bit like daunting and confusing. So we'll keep talking about
Thank God I'm not pregnant. Cause like, I like salt too much to be pregnant.
Was not a fun time.
I'll leave that one to you, Feathers.
I'm done. Two. Done. Yeah.
So back on the salt train.
Yes, forever.
Okay. Our next question is from Leah from Minnesota. She said, on behalf of all of us type A runners, please clarify the one gel per 30-minute fueling strategy. If I am doing an easy 1 hour and 20-minute training run, do I even need to fuel since it's an easy run? If so, per your recommendation, I would take a gel at 30 minutes and 1 hour, but would I need the gel at 1 hour if I'm only going to be running another 20 minutes? If my run is a tempo run and I can't fuel and run at the same time for the fear of choking, is it worth it to stop mid-workout to fuel? How specific is this 30-minute guideline?
Yeah,
Wow, this is type A.
This is.
I mean, I have these answers, but they're not Feather's answers. So Feathers, take it away.
He's like, I really want to answer this one though. Yeah. I was like, I feel like Leah's not alone here, but I think Leah is overthinking this. So the basic fueling guideline of fuel every 30 minutes is for long runs and races. Like that's where that recommendation is coming from. So like definitely let's lean into that for those things. But then as she mentioned, there's some nuance because we might be doing an easy minute eight or an easy 80 minute run on a Tuesday. Do I need to fuel that? So I thought maybe her personality needed some like additional guidelines to tack on to that. So we put those together here. So if on a long run.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Am I going to hear anything about graham crackers in this breakdown?
No.
Okay. Maybe. I thought I was going to get some graham crackers. Maybe. Like pre-run on the easy ones to right. get a graham cracker in? Okay.
Right.
All right. So, go ahead. I'm waiting.
Right. So that's exactly one of the things is if your run's going to be over 80 minutes, but it's an easy run, like during the week, we're not practicing fueling for a long run or anything. We just eat more beforehand. So to Thomas's point, maybe we eat 4 graham crackers instead of 2. And then we probably don't need to fuel out there. Put an emergency gel in your pocket just in case you do. But those easy weekday runs that, you know, an 80 minute run for someone might be their long run on the weekend. So of course we're going to fuel that. But if you're to a point at your training where an 80 minute run is on a Tuesday and you're eating well before and after, you don't necessarily have to fuel that. And then the other thing was the threshold work question. So any paces that are threshold or faster, we're not going to digest fuel very well during that. So we either eat more beforehand or we take a gel during our warm up, or if we have a long cool down, we take a gel during our cool down, but I would not try to fuel during some of those, I call them stupid fast paces, because you're just not going to feel good.
I've been doing that. Anywhere. I've been doing that. Like when I get the speed work.
Yeah.
Cause normally my coach will give me like 2 minutes standing, walking in between threshold paces.
Okay.
So he'll be like, run your ass off. Then you get, and you get whether it's 800s or a mile repeat.
Yeah.
He gives me a 2 to 3 minute standing. So usually halfway through those ones, cause those will typically be like a 10 mile workout or something like that.
Yeah.
I'll just carry one gel. And instead of worrying about the 30 to 40 minute rule, I just halfway through, I'm like,
take it.
I'll just have a gel and go. And I haven't had any issues, so I don't know.
Good. And that's good gut training, honestly, so that you can take that gel at the end of the race when you're basically running threshold effort. So I think it's not a bad thing to do that by any means. Yeah. And I also think having those standing breaks bring your heart rate down, which is going to help us digest, right? Like if our heart rate is like really high for a long time, like mine always is like that thing's not coming down. You know, I think that's,
but that plays into,
that
plays into part of her question about whether or not you need to keep running, taking the gel or you can stop.
She's saying, should she stop? Is it worth fueling to stop?
Yeah. Mm. I think I'll ask, again, Feathers, but when I'm doing these workouts, it's the exact same thing where I'm doing a threshold pace. I get those cool down minutes. I take it. Literally it takes less than 3 seconds to get the gel down.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the best thing to do is to try it, right? Like Thomas, you probably did some of those workouts without fueling and then you did it with fueling. And if you feel better and you can push the pace faster and you recover better after, it's worth it to pause and fuel, you know? So part of this is all just an experiment and see, you know, what works best for each person. Yeah. I was going to say the only thing we didn't answer is, I get this question a lot, so I feel like we should address it, is depending on how much time's left in your long run, do I take that last gel?
Oh, yeah.
So if you've got more than 10 minutes to run, more than 15 minutes to run, take the gel, right? It's a really good practice to fueling until the end of a long run when we were saying our effort's higher. A lot of people struggle to get their last gel in the 10K, last 10K of a marathon. So practice that in your training. Like that gel is going to hit your system within 7 minutes, right? So, you know, if we're running 10 plus more minutes, it's going to help us feel better that final mile, 2 miles, whatever it is. And then also help with recovery. Like taking fuel is never lost. It's never wasted, right? Our body is utilizing that. And whether it's helping our performance or helping our recovery, you know, it's never a bad idea to continue to fuel through these workouts or long runs.
And if you like Pavlov, it's a nice, you know, you get to that point, you get your gel. It's something to look forward to in the race. And I don't mean forward because like a lot of people don't like taking a gel, and I get that, but it does break up the miles. If you're thinking, instead of thinking I've got 26 miles to go, you're just like, okay, I've got 3 more miles till I take a gel,
right,
or whatever. And I feel like those little mental breaks, can help you get through a tough spot.
And to know, like, I only have 2 gels left. This must almost be over. I agree. I do think it helps.
Yeah, I love emptying my pockets. Yeah. Like, oh, almost done.
Yeah, yeah.
There's been several times towards the end of a marathon where I'm like mile 23 and I'm always questioning, like, if I have a gel, do I take it? And sometimes I literally can't. But if I can, every single time, it's a better finish line experience. Mm-hmm. Every single time. Mm-hmm. So if you can get it down, just freaking take it.
Well, that's what in Tokyo, my mind was like, you can't take this last gel. Like, my diaphragm hurts so bad. I was like, you can't add an element to this. And then, like, the rational side of my brain was like, Megan, you can't finish this without another gel, you know? So, like, I made myself take it. But I get that sometimes our gut instinct is like, don't do this. So we need to override that with, like, you know, the rational side of our brain and be like, no, take it.
You know that little meme of the girl eating and she's like, I'd say she's 2 or 3 years old and she keeps like gagging and she's like, it's good.
I'm like, I can't watch that. It makes me feel ill.
I feel, that's how I feel those later gels in the race. I'm like, that's good. All right. You know, it's good for you, but getting it down can sometimes be.
Okay. Let's answer one more question here. This is from Sarah Krizan. Maybe that's your last name. Hey, Megan and Fuel for the Soul team. I'm a huge fan of the podcast and look forward to listening every time I see a new episode drop. I wanted to write in with a nutrition question I've had for a while. I have a healthcare job that requires me to start super early and I can't get my workouts in until the afternoon. This works out fine for easy runs and lifts, but I've been struggling with what to eat on afternoon quality sessions and long run days. How can I nutritionally set myself up for success when I work all day and have an afternoon 20 mile or tempo run? Thanks so much for your help and keep producing awesome, informative content.
I feel for this person.
Yeah, 20 miles after a full day of work is rough.
Wait, have I ever told you that in my former life, I used to do long runs on Friday after work? I don't know if we've talked about that.
You
did,
because you told me. Well, you've told me off the record because you like to enjoy your Friday evenings.
Yeah, I live downtown Cleveland, and I was like, I'm not sacrificing my weekends for a long run. So I used to do them Friday after my healthcare job, which probably wasn't as stressful as hers. But yeah.
Then how did you recover? Like, did you get sleep and rest after that to recover?
So,
like you should after long runs?
Yes. I think I would go to bed then Friday night, but then I would have all day Saturday to have fun. We played like flag football and then we'd like go out and I wasn't going out Friday. I was going home.
Wait, was this single Meg?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, you ran before, like how long have you been running?
2009 was my first marathon and there a guy I was dating was running the marathon and I was like, cool, I'll train with you. I'll do it. And then he never ended up running and we did not end up together. And I ran the marathon and did pretty well. And I was like, well, thanks for introducing me to this.
Solid.
Yeah. So anyways, I've lived this, right? I've done 20 milers on a Friday after work. And it is, you really do have to look at the days that you have a workout or you have a long run differently. So just like Thomas said, lunchtime is totally going to impact that afternoon run, even if it's not till like 5 o'clock and we eat at like noon. If we're eating too much fat, too much fiber, we're going to feel that in the afternoon. And just like we were saying, when you're running in the morning, your stomach's pretty empty because it's been, you know, emptying all night long or digesting. And when we're running in the afternoon, we have a full day of food in our stomach. So what we really want to do is be strategic about like what and when we're eating during that day. And it doesn't have to be every day, but just the days that we're doing like a big workout or a long run in the afternoon. So we want to take a look at what are we eating for lunch. It probably needs to be higher carb, lower protein, lower fat, lower fiber. So think about what you would normally eat before a long run. If you eat a bagel, let's do like a bagel and a banana and like maybe a little bit of protein at lunch. And then 2 hours before your run, let's do another carb, another bagel, some grams, some pretzels, something like that. So treating it almost like you were doing a morning run, but you're obviously eating, you know.
Okay. So lunchtime, you're talking bagel, banana, and then eating again 2 hours before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, maybe it would be another like things that you would typically eat before a long run or before a race.
So I mean, that's almost what you have.
Yeah.
That's almost what you have marathon morning.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Which is going to feel weird because you're like, I'm working. You know what I mean? But
I'm hungry.
Yeah. Like, you just have to change it up. And maybe that's not enough. Maybe you need to add more to those things or you know, I probably would add like cheese sticks or yogurt to it because dairy doesn't bother me, for some protein to kind of help with the hunger piece. But, you know, I know that sits in my stomach.
What about pretzels?
So, yeah, pretzels would be a great idea. Yeah. Because
Megan just bought pretzels online.
I did.
Online.
Pretzels are on the way today.
Yeah.
It's a whole thing. We'll have to tell you later. But
okay, I need to hear this.
Go to pretzels.com.
I love it. The other thing to think about is hydration. So it's really easy if she's busy at work, if she's masked, like not be thinking about drinking enough. And then the other piece too, which is not something we would do frequently, but I mean, when I used to do long runs on Friday, I would have some caffeine at like 3 p.m. I never drink caffeine afternoon because I can't sleep. But if I was doing a long run, we know caffeine helps. I still always slept okay. I know some people don't. So, you know, that's a personal preference in there, but we might want to strategically add a little caffeine before like an afternoon long run.
I wasn't even thinking about that piece of it, but because I'll take a caffeinated gel mid long run, but would you recommend that if you're running at 5, 6 p.m.?
I have some people that that affects, so they don't take them. Like they know if they do that, they can't sleep. But what I found for a lot of people is we metabolize that caffeine pretty quickly when we're running.
Yeah.
So if you're one of those people and you take, you want to practice taking a caffeinated gel and you're only doing evening runs, just make it the first gel. And then, you know, notice if it impacts sleep.
Like a lot for years, people used to have an espresso with their dessert or a coffee with dessert.
Yeah.
And nobody complained about sleep. What is going on? Like, does it really affect us? Like if you have coffee after 4 p.m., are you really going to, is your sleep going to be affected?
It really can be. Yeah. Because they look at like the half-life of like how we metabolize caffeine, and even fast caffeine metabolizers, it's still in our system 6 to 8 hours later. So, and then if you're a slow caffeine metabolizer, like we were talking about earlier, it could be in your system for 12 hours still. So a lot of it's just going to be, you know, our own tolerance to caffeine. Some people are so.
Because I've had an espresso at dinner and gone knocked out sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't. I'd be awake.
Okay. So it is possible because Megan's done it. So Sarah.
Buckle up, Sarah. You're going for a
you're
run.
You're going to have to change some habits a little bit, but I think you can do it. Thank you all for listening as always. And if you have a question that we have not answered, you can send us an email at fuelforthesoulpodcast@gmail.com and we will answer it here on the show.
Am I going to say peas and carrots now?
That's typically how it works.
All right. You say your thing.
Bye.
All right. You say your thing, Meg.
Bye.
Peas and carrots.
I love how scripted that was.
Thomas.
What? Can I finish my text message?
It's your world.
We're just Thomas we're time just living over in it. Here. Yeah.
What? Okay.
don't know what that means.
Alcohol or salt?
Which could I live without? I still can't believe Robbie ate that salt out of a bowl.
I lost a sock that day. I had to go in the woods.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I want to go get a coffee. Yeah. Cut back on that fried chicken. That's all I'm going to tell you. Dude, I'm putting those on my nipples.
Oh, that's feisty.
I'm just saying in general, not for racing, not for any other reason than I like the way they feel. Like, and I mean, I'm not like crazy. If you're seeing the video here, this is regular man hair on the arms.
Regular man hair.
But like this gets prickly. It gets prickly if you shave it, and I don't like that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, prickly cactus.
Right.
Okay. All right. Let's end this one before things get too weird.